collective wisdom means that at one go, all the owners that bought into Kent Ridge Hill Residences and Normanton Park collectively will have this wisdom to only want to exit at a certain margin. You're only going to enjoy this one time.
But if let's say your plan is to still have the aspiration to move on to other property type, to leverage property as part of your investment strategy, then maybe you might want to consider the time frame as well as the time horizon. 14 years, will you land up in a better position? Or would you want to go for a non-PLH, your period would then be shortened significantly by 5 years, and then you can see what are your next options.
A very, very good point in terms of maybe like it's like a 10K difference in terms of grant. But if you produce a baby, Singaporean, within 6 months, you can always apply for a top-up grant.
Your pronunciation is a bit odd today.
Really?
Produce a baby?
The point. Let's go.
Time you enjoy is not time wasted.
All right, so today we are back with our PRW home team. Let's have a look at them. It's been some time, right? When was the last time we did this?
Oh, very recent.
Huh? Very recent?
No, it's not recent. I haven't had nuggets for very long.
Where have you been?
I wasn't asked to come. I have nuggets at home.
You know, why didn't you call him?
I don't have the power.
And where have you been, Grace? Where have you been to?
Nowhere, just you have working disappeared. Hard. Just working hard.
Show us your hand. Show us your finger. Oh my goodness, congratulations. Let's play a clip of an engagement.
A clip of my engagement? There's no clip.
Okay, anyway, today we have a special episode and this idea came from our team, George.
Wife.
Oh, okay. And of course, Adele executed it. Let's introduce Adele for a little bit. Come, Adele, share with us.
Hi, I'm turning 21 this year.
Oh my goodness, is it?
Wow.
Is it illegal to work?
No.
No lah. Above 18, you can.
Got illegal to work on
that? Yeah, we have very young talents here. Adele, tell us, how do you do this? How do you get so many questions compiled? So we're going to have a Q&A segment today for today's NOTG Banter home team. Yeah, and how do you get so many questions, by the way?
I posted this 4 times in the past week.
Wow, fantastic, man. Okay, great. We have some great questions. Thanks, Adele, for this. So we're going to do a Q&A segment for today's episode. And feel free also to just write in the comment section. If you have any other questions, we are happy to compile them and then have another Q&A segment, round number two. And I think for now, we're going to kickstart with George first because later he might have to rush off for negotiation. Is it for client?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we're going to have 2 props here. One is this make-do paperclip. One is the bell. So we'll just let the contestant fight to answer. I will take part in some of the questions as well. So we have the first question from Adam. How much should one have for down payment before getting a HDB 5-room that's worth 750,000? Grace!
Okay, thanks Adam for your question.
Can faster answer, no?
Okay. How much do one have down payment, have for down payment before getting a 5-room HDB flat? Okay, so I'm assuming this is a HDB resale flat. So the down payment is pretty standard. It depends on your loan to value ratio. So for your down payment for your HDB, you can either get a HDB loan or a bank loan. If you are looking at bank loan, then it's standardized across with condominiums as well. You need a 5% cash as well as 20% cash or CPF. So if you are taking a HDB loan instead, then there's a 80% loan to value ratio. So 20% has to be from your CPF or cash. But if you do have sufficient amount of CPF, they'll actually wipe out your CPF first before you're able to take the loan. So you might not even be able to take the max 80% loan. Okay, so for the 5-room HDB, if you are taking... So I must...
just before the show, I said, please don't engage in small talk when someone is talking. And you're wrong. The usual guy who always do small talk, he cannot talk to anyone, he talk to the cup now. He just cannot control himself.
No, John, I'm
giggling. I'm giggling.
How to not laugh when I see you?
Sorry.
Okay, let's Grace, touch a little bit about the grant as well, because the grant can actually sound of the grant can cover the entire down payment.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So actually, you are able to take grants up to 180K if you're eligible. So there are many different grants that you can take. First is the standard family. I think it's family.
First timer grant.
The first timer grant. So if you are, I think it's from anywhere from 50 to 80K, depending whether you are taking a smaller than 4-room flat or bigger. Yeah, and there are other housing grants that you can take as well, such as proximity housing grant. So if you are living close to or with your parents, then it's 20 to 30K in terms of grant. And your enhanced housing grant, depending on your income level. So all the way up to even 90,000. Yeah.
Yeah. So actually, for those of you, if let's say you're planning to save up and you're taking maybe like a bank loan, but you're worried about your 5% cash and 20% CPF, 5% definitely has to be in cash, but that 20% actually, you can use the grant to substantiate part of the portion, because that is a CPF housing grant. You'll be credited into your CPF account and then use it for deduction of the down payment. So usually all young couples, they use the grant as a kickstart to fulfill that down payment. So actually, it's very important to understand this portion, because that can accelerate your speed to getting your first HDB property. And a lot of people might have the myth that, you know, I need to save up that 20 or 25%. It's so hard to save up. I need to delay my purchasing period. So the grant is actually a huge help. Yeah. Anybody want to add in on this part?
I think in summary is, let's say you're buying for like a 5-room HDB. If you are going for a HDB loan, okay, assuming that you are a Singapore citizen and you are a first timer, right? Okay, the down payment required if you're getting HDB loan is about $173,000, inclusive of buyer's stamp duty. That's an estimate. If you are probably going for a bank loan, which means that you need a 25% down payment plus 3% stamp duty, your down payment requires about $210,000, right? So, of course, if you are a first-timer Singapore citizen, the grants that you can be eligible as a first-timer will be $40,000.
For the 5-room flat.
For the 5-room flat and above. So, you just deduct off from like the 172K or 210K, that will be actually your cash and CPF that you will have need to save up in order to go ahead and purchase a 5-room flat of $750,000.
All right, great.
So,
thanks.
Okay, but this also assumes no COV. So because your loan, your LTV is kept at the valuation or your purchase price, whichever is lower. So it assumes that there's no COV, like in this instance, because your COV has to be paid in cash.
So one so-called kind of mindset and in terms of like mind framing that a lot of buyers have for the resale market is that a lot of people go for BTO because they want to avoid the COV component. But of course, if you cannot wait, you want to move in immediately after 3 to 6 months, then when you go for a resale, you still do have an option. If let's say there is a substantial amount of COV, because you will only know the amount of COV after you put down the option fee, and then you have 21 days. During that period, the valuation will be done by HDB. Then, based on your agreed purchase price, let's say you agree with the seller at 750,000, but the valuation came out to be 700K. You have to top up 50K of cash COV. Then all you need to do basically is, of course, give a call to the seller or the seller's agent and say that because of this COV, you decided not to proceed. And of course, with that, you have to give up your $1,000 option fee. But that is still worth it in the sense that it gives you a chance not to proceed if the COV turns out to be very, very high. Maybe Grace, share with us some options to do the level of homework in order to understand a little bit more what could be the rough valuation.
Okay, so in order to understand what could possibly be the valuation, of course, at the end of the day, it's decided by the panel when you actually put down your option fee. But what you could do is look at some of the past transactions within the block. So usually if you go to the HDB website, map services, you'll be able to search the block, look at some of the past transactions within your block as well as within the 200 meters radius. What are some of the prices transacting at? Of course, these prices do not reflect if they have COV inside or not, but they do give you a good indication of what are some of these prices transacting at. HDB does take into consideration how renovated the unit is as well. But I would not say that it's a substantial amount such that, you know, if it's a very beautifully renovated unit that you are fully able to avoid COV. Usually, I don't think that's the case on the ground. But also one thing to think about is that if you don't spend this money on the COV, likely it is an original condition unit. So if it is an original condition unit, then still you would have to probably do some light touch up. So that's something to think about as well.
I think also last thing would be for 750K, people might think, okay, so how much income do I need in order to get a 75% loan to buy a 750k home. So that will be approximately $11,000 of combined income, assuming that you can take a 25 loan tenure, meaning that you're 40 years and below. So I just did a rough calculation.
Sure, yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. Thanks, everybody, for chipping on this question. I think good question. And I think it's a fundamental question that a lot of buyers probably will want to know. So I think let's move on to the second one. And of course, this is by Daniel, because he's asking on behalf of your friend, right? Yeah. Okay, great. So is your friend in the verge of applying for this?
Already applied. Already
applied. Oh, but you want to know? Sure, man. No problem. Let's do it. Which is a better BDO option? Should I go for Raja Summit, non-PLH, prime housing?
Prime location
prime
housing.
Prime location housing. Or Farrer Park Fields, which is a PLH scheme. And who wants to take this up? Maybe share with us first the key differences between non-PLH and PLH.
So for non-PLH and PLH, I think how I see it is the opportunity cost. The moment I buy into something that is PLH in nature, I will have to hold on for minimal 10 years of window. That is excluding any construction time frame. Let's give it 4 years. So the holding period is going to be 14 years. If let's say I manage to get the keys by 30, by the time I can sell, it will be 44. 14 years from now, a lot of things can happen. TDSR might change, my LTV might change. In future, it might affect my next option if I want to move. So I guess there isn't really a better option. It depends on your time horizon and your ultimate goal. Mm. If let's say you feel that I want the location, this will be my forever home, I'll just buy this and stay, then by all means, go ahead. But if let's say your plan is to still have the aspiration to move on to other property types, to leverage property as part of your investment strategy, then maybe you might want to consider the time frame as well as the time horizon. 14 years, will you land up in a better position, or would you want to go for a non-PLH? Your period will then be shortened significantly by 5 years, and then you can see what are your next option.
And of course, the profit portion, there's going to be a percentage that has to go back to HDB when you sell a PLH property. And just to refresh my memory, I think there's also a kind of like criteria from the next buyer that buys over PLH, right? They have to fulfill which is the income ceiling,
yes,
right?
Yes, cap on their income at 14,000.
14,000 as well, right? Any other thoughts from you, Grace?
If you want to maximize your investment cycle in property, then go for the non-PLH one so that you can change in the prior property as soon as possible. But I think if you are mainly looking for own stay location-wise, then of course, PLH in terms of location, the Farrer Park Fields is a fantastic location. But I think overall, I think if we're just from a bigger picture standpoint, if today I want to plan to continue the investment journey in property, right? And if I need to buy BTO as my first property, one of the things I will prioritize at is the waiting time as low as possible, because I want to get out of my minimum occupancy period as soon as possible.
Yep.
Yeah, because your golden age for acquiring properties is between age 30 to age 45. So that's 15 years where your loan can have maximum impact. So you actually increase your returns on your property planning.
Awesome. Great. Let's go to Kif. Budget $4 million. I'm looking to buy something in D15, the land of the East, which is George's favorite.
East side, best side.
You still have like East side, best side.
Three new launch.
It's gross, George.
I said East side, best
okay,
side.
Okay, so the question from gross, Kif is, Grace. Should I buy one of the three new launches now, which is Grand Dunman, Continuum, as well as
Tembusu Grand.
Tembusu Grand. Or should I go for a resale property in D15? Which one should I touch? And of course, recently there's been like headline news talking about the fact that there's a 70% difference in terms of the PSF price of new Continuum. Launch in the East versus Continuum. And sometimes I will really urge audiences to, once you look at the headlines, it's very important to go down into some of the details here, because this headline entirely is just, I mean, like in my version is more like a little bit like a YouTube
clickbait
kind of I mean, I'm not, this article is fantastic, right? But just saying that sometimes when you look at this, you might be shocked. Hey, you know, it's really 70%. Mm. Does it apply to the entire D15? Because D15 is so huge. But this is just an example of this particular scenario inside the article, talking about the fact that there was a median price of a project, resale, freehold, 1595 PSF versus Continuum. I think we shouldn't just take this as a blanket kind of application because in D15, there are a lot of varying products. Some of the PSF or freeholds already at 2000 plus. Some of the 99s are also at a higher tier. So this is just one example too. Of course, hopefully you'll read the rest of the article. But let's come back to this. What should I do? Three new launches, which two of them are 99 years, but Continuum is freehold. Or the rest of the resale in D15, which predominantly are freehold, but there are a lot of 99s seafront facing as well. What do you guys think? Hey, how are you using the props?
Okay, so I think...
Sure.
Grace can go on. Okay. So basically, I think like not just applicable for District 15. I think, you know, one of our recent webinars where we actually share with audience how we can actually compare. Is it better to go for a new launch or like a resale property? And actually, we have like four different factors, right? First is we use our break-even calculator. Next is the lease reset calculator mode analysis. And then we come up with an X threshold, meaning that if we end up that the price on the new launch versus the resale is within a certain X percentage, then we will go for the new launch.
So what's the X threshold?
The X percentage we only share during our consults. Sure. Okay. But generally, okay, in summary wise, if I use Tembusu Grand versus Shaw Residences, for example, right? Mm. If let's say we were to apply the lease reset calculator, give me a moment. So for example, Shaw Residences right now, if you use a typical 1141 square feet, like a 3-bedder, currently the PSF is about 2033 per square feet. Tembusu Grand also has like a 3-bedder starting from 2.3 million, which works out to be a 2003 PSF. So if we were to reset this, both of them back to a full 99-year lease, right? When I purchase a Shaw Residences at 2033 PSF, right? I'm actually valuing this property about 2261 per square feet versus a Tembusu Grand 2348 PSF. So if we just compare in summary-wise, right? If you think about it, when the PSF is very, very close by, then of course it makes a very strong case that the new launches are actually a very good entry price, right? If let's say, for example, when you do the lease reset and we see that actually the PSF gap is huge, then resale will present a better option. But of course, that is also from a very one-dimensional angle where we analyze from a per square feet angle because properties in Singapore is not really an apple-to-apple comparison, right? So we need to make an adjustment in terms of age of property, the size of the project, land size, etc., the unit mix, the layout, things like that, right? So, but in short, I think in District 15, new launches still present in current market like a good option. As well as if you were to compare Continuum Grand Diamond as well as Tembusu Grand. Of course, Grand Diamond, the price has not been released yet. Preview is going to start very, very soon. I think it will be, preview will start like, when this episode is launched.
Yeah.
But if we look at $4 million budget, right, what can we buy over at Continuum and Tembusu Grand? In summary, is actually both, in terms of 4-bedders in these two projects, it will have exceeded the $4 million mark. But right. Let's say like a 3-bedder, it will probably start from about like $3.2-$3.3 million. And usually with that in mind, for example, if pricing is pretty similar from a quantum perspective, then I will be slightly more inclined to go for the freehold option. Because of course, this is caveat that Continuum, it is not your usual typical smaller project size. So for example, if let's say today, Continuum and Tembusu Grand is same price, but Continuum is let's say like a 200 unit or below kind of project, right? Then it will not be a fair comparison. But because Continuum is 800 plus over units, right? So I think that when the pricing is very similar, then I think the freehold is a good option to go for using it just to compare Continuum and Tembusu Grand.
So for you, Yuro, personally, like if let's say you were Cliff and you are going for a 3-bedder, then you look at these three new launches and you happen to see a freehold resale.
Yes.
There's around the same quantum as Continuum. What would be your decision metrics? And of course, you like, I mean, you perhaps because of this, right, you will only select Continuum as a comparison, you will maybe give up Grand Garment and Tembusu. So what will be your decision metrics?
You mean what, freehold resale?
Freehold resale versus
versus Continuum, and then their price quantum is similar.
Yeah, maybe similar, but maybe that freehold resale, because it was older, right? Slightly bigger square footage. What will be your thought process? And let's say you and your wife are okay with either one.
Okay, so I think if we were to, of course, if we were to compare with things like One Amber, like, you know, like freehold land size is pretty similar. But if we were to compare like in terms of quantum range for like a three bedder, it will be higher. So Continuum will present like a more attractive like overall entry price from a quantum perspective. Because we understand that most of the time when we read newspaper articles or like research houses, right, they always compare things based on per square feet. I think those are a good starting point to see where has potential value. But I think from a practical standpoint, we always need to revert back and look at the quantum, because end of the day, we, our affordability, our down payment required, the loan is all based on your full quantum value. It's not based on PSF, because if you just purely based on PSF, CCR prices should be much higher now. Yeah. Right. So coming back to your question, right, I would say that the only reason that I can have a similar quantum compared to Continuum is if I were to go for like a really boutique project in District 15. And I think the summary is that like I will still opt for a Continuum. If let's say, for example, pricing is pretty similar, then I go for the new one. That's always my rationale. La.
Fantastic. Mm. Awesome. Great. All right. By the way, we are having the Nuggets in, and this is proudly sponsored by PLB. Yeah. So I want to thank PLB for sponsoring the Nuggets for today. For
how come today got platter? Like it's presented in a platter.
It's presented by
Cephas.
PLB team. Cephas. Do you purposely buy this?
For the wine and cheese.
Oh. Ooh. Oh, wine and cheese. So when can we ever have a real sponsorship by McDonald's?
Oh, very spicy.
Let's have a look at the next question. So what do I do if I bought a three-bedder unit at Kenridge Hill in 2018? And of course, I'm assuming that probably you might be thinking like whether should you rent out or should you sell, because it's it has just reached TOP, I believe. Or,
yeah. Congratulations, yeah. This is a couple of months ago.
Yeah, so firstly, of course, you have to do your key collection defects check, and then please do a defect check and a rectification by the developer before you start a renovation, because if not, the defects will be voided. Right, so who wants to take this question? Come.
Ken, I try.
All right, George, take it away.
Okay, so maybe before that, right, let's give some context first. Let's take a look at the location in terms of the map. Kenridge Hill is in D5, nestled right inside this road called Jalan Mat Jambol. So you can walk to the MRT station, but if you take a look around there, right, in terms of the new launches, you have a few competition. One will be above, which is Normanton Park. I wouldn't say it's exactly in like the same area, because Normanton Park is like, you know, being separated by the park, and then it is nearer towards the EYE side. So that is a mega project, Normanton Park. So I think Normanton Park is also approaching TOP pretty soon. Mm. So there's gonna be a lot of competition coming from there. So you have competition number one from Normanton. Number two is Terra Hill, which is in a great location. Out of these three projects, right, 99 years would then be for Kenridge Hill and Normanton. Terra Hill would then be freehold. Next, we take a look at the price point. For Terra Hills, average PSF is at about 2.7 to 2.8 PSF.
Mm-hmm.
Kenridge, average PSF transactor, right, for some of the sub-sale is at about 1,009 to 2,000 PSF. So what we are looking at is about 40% of disparity for a PSF basis. Of course, Terra Hill is a freehold, so naturally it will command a premium. Location-wise, I personally think that Terra Hill is a lot shorter. You can literally just walk to the MRT station. Right now, you're seeing some capital gain already if you were to sell, because I believe if you purchase in 2018, the PSF should be around 1,700 PSF. So if you were to sell at 2,000 PSF, I think that's a decent profit. Should you wait or should you hold? Right? I think it depends on your next option and whether back then in 2018 when you buy this three bedder, is it something that you feel that you can stay? If let's say you feel that you can still stay there, I think there will still be growth, especially in the D5 area because of the transformation that's going to take place. And over there, there isn't any projects that are big in nature. And I think if let's say you feel that the size is still okay, you want to stay there for quite a period of time, you can still stay, because the next price movement, right, will then be when Terra Hill starts to hit the resale market. You can still choose to exit at that stage due to the price difference of about 40% to a freehold. Unless you're saying that, okay, at this current juncture, I want to move to something bigger, then, you know, you feel that the space is not big enough. I think with the paper gain that you're looking at right now, you can still exit comfortably.
Well, George, can you share with us how much is the current asking price for Normanton and current asking price for Kentridge?
Let me take a look.
Current asking price for Kentridge is like 2003-2005.
Mm. Normanton is going to be end of this year, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to probably have a 6 months gap. Then Kentridge is just COP. Yeah, while George is checking, I think probably one thing to note is that take note, Normanton is a mega development.
Yeah,
it has a host of facilities, and of course there's varying kinds of units. When it's TOP, then of course it will be another sort of like a source of competition in this zoning. So if you own something in Kentridge, you might want to take note that in 6 months time, there will be a fresh supply coming out in terms of rental competition and sale competition. But each project have its own plus and minuses. Kentridge is a low-rise development, very close to nature. But Normanton, of course, for people that love high-rise, big community.
Views.
Yeah, and they want that high-rise views and stuff like that. Or maybe they want like a high-rise living, then they might choose to opt for that. So yeah, how much are the
2002-2003 PSF are the kind of price for Normanton Park.
So it's about the same. Asking price.
Yeah, asking price.
Right.
For Kentridge, yeah, it's also about the same. 2002-2003 PSF.
Yeah. Anything to add, Yurong and Grace?
Okay, I think this boils down to our webinar 5. You know, like we also share with the audience on like based on research, right? Should you sell during TOP? Should you continue to hold on this property, right? So the conclusion is if you hold on to this property, definitely there will still be appreciation opportunity based on number one, it is still relatively young. Of course, you have like Terra Hill, Northampton Park, and all that will probably continue to help you to move it to a newer benchmark. There is a circle line that is going to complete the circle in 2 years' time. So all these are all Greater Southern Waterfront longer time down the road. Right? So all these are growth factors that will push up the pricing. Now the question will be, it always boils down to at what stage are you at in your portfolio? Right. If today you are at what we call the growth phase, and after you let go of Kentridge Hill Residences, you are able to double up your, or like, you know, really increase quite significantly, right, the total property value that you can own, then it makes sense to do the switch now, because you will know that you will get more gain in your next portfolio, assuming you can identify the correct property, compared to just holding on to your Kentridge Hill Residences. But if you have already reached the consolidation part of your portfolio where, you know, like if you were to let it go today, you are not going to increase your portfolio value. Then I think it makes sense for you to continue to hold on this property for some more years until you decide to right size when you're reaching your retirement phase. Right. So, and at the meantime, you can either enjoy for own use or you can rent it out to maximize, you know, the high rental rates at the current market.
So if I were to look at 2018, thanks, Jerome, on Kentridge Hill, I will presume that I'm not sure. Sorry, what's the question?
Three beta,
right? Okay. So I presume probably you have bought in at about 1,007 plus PSF, depending on your stack. It could be 1,006 or 1,007, thereabout based on the prices there.
Yep.
If, of course, right now, if you can exit maybe at about 2,000 or 2,001, that's about $400 gain. There is, of course, right now an opportunity in the sense that this year there are more new launches coming out. There's also a host of projects that will hit TOP. So sometimes, because of the fact that we only have a very limited time horizon to enter and exit property investment, it will always make sense to hunt for the next disparity. Like in this season, is there a disparity in some of the freehold projects, for example, in the resale market or maybe in other new launches? And maybe you might want to do a swap here. Take note, there's two consideration points. Kentridge Hill Residences and Normanton Park is going to enjoy this thing called, of course, in my nuggets on the go, I talk about herd mentality, but of course, another word is to call like a collective wisdom, right? Collective wisdom means that at one go, all the owners that bought into Kentridge Hill Residences and Normanton Park collectively will have this wisdom to only want to exit at a certain margin. So you're only going to enjoy this one time. And maybe when Kentridge Hill and Normanton Park, when you fully TOP, you'll get to see this enjoyment for a period of time. But largely, the price sometimes will not have that significant jump already. It will probably be tapering at the range of maybe 2000, 2001, then gradually go to 2002 over the next period of years. So you might want to hunt for the next disparity with a bigger jump. Yeah. Let's go to the next question.
I think this one to put context of like what Melvin just shared, right, is usually if let's say you have bought a good new launch, you realize that if you sell during a TOP or you know like within 1 year of TOP, what happens is if it's a good project, your annualized gain is about 5 to 7%. This is before leverage of the property. But if let's say you compare with in terms of the modern era, assuming that you know modern era meaning that the property is held after total debt servicing ratio was implemented after 2013, you realize that for people who hold for longer, yes, overall in terms of their profit margin, gross profit is higher because the more years are being held. But the annualized gain usually will average out to be closer to 3.5%. So if you are looking at, you want to really make your money maximize, right, then it presents a case for you to continue to switch and hunt for the disparity that what Melvin mentioned.
Right. Great. Thanks, Yuron. Next question. I have an inter-terrace which I'm considering to sell. Sorry, to sell or to rent. Is the market quiet for both the rental market and the selling market? Who wants to take this?
Okay, so I think this question... I think this question is actually pretty similar to the previous question in terms of, you know, whether you want to continue to rent or continue to sell. So some differences in terms, the fundamental of the question is the same, meaning should I have a property, should I continue to rent it or should I sell? So some of the previous, I think, points that were discussed are applicable as well, meaning to consider your life stage and your portfolio, right? So holding on to an inter-terrace, I think inter-terraces have performed fantastically over the past 2 years because of the quantum. So they are still at a very comfortable quantum. I think looking at the transactions in the past 6 months, so for terrace homes in the OCR, they're hovering about, the median price is 3.8, RCR at 3.5, and then in CCR area, the median is 5.8. Yeah, so, and if you were to move on to the semi-detaches, so basically if, you know, we are looking at the disparity between the terrace and the semi-Ds, right, in the OCR region, you are looking at 3.8, and then the next, for 3.8 for terraces, and then 5.2 for the semi-detached. So the price disparity is still pretty, I would say, it's not too significant of a jump if you were to compare, let's say, from semi-D to like a detached. I feel that the disparity is a little bit bigger. If you're looking to upgrade, if you're looking for a bigger space, then definitely it's a good time because terraces have enjoyed a fair bit of appreciation, especially during the pandemic period because of their entry-level prices at the time. And now, you know, looking to move forward to the semi-Ds might be a good opportunity. But if you are looking to downsize, if you are looking to, let's say, you know, you're asking whether you can rent or you can, or you should rent or you should sell, meaning that I assume you have another property that you and your family are staying in. So that means this property is probably an investment property. So if you are not in a hurry to, you know, offload it to for your own stay needs, then perhaps you can consider renting it out because there is still a good runway for appreciation growth for the terraces. Yeah. So I think it really depends on life stage. Yeah.
Right.
Actually, this is a very good topic because a lot of homeowners actually have this thought. So maybe before we answer this question, right, is to see, number one, whether what is your next plan? We have plans for some of the clients that, you know, they want to migrate to other countries. They just want to liquidate and then park their funds in, you know, overseas, set up a family there. If let's say that is a plan, then, you know, I think the clear way is to just sell it and then to sell it based on PLB's methodology.
Can you see the question?
George, you've just confused us.
I think there's one other consideration of this, right, is it wasn't mentioned whether this inter-terrace is a freehold 999 or 99 years. Fantastic. And what is the balance lease, right? So if it's a freehold 999, of course, we know that you have time on your side to continue to hold on this property. Land prices will continue to go up. So the asset price will definitely go up. But if let's say this is a 99 years property, depending on what is the current balance lease, it could be advantageous for you to convert into a freehold terrace such that it has more legacy planning perspective if that is your wish. You are taking advantage of a good, strong market, right? to actually convert into a more better long-term, I would say, asset. Anyway, whether it's 99 or freehold properties, is already a very good asset because it's a landed property.
So if let's say the plan is to really hold on for long-term, I think you can just rent it first. Again, depending on the condition of the property, whether it's a cap one or, you know, or whichever category. Because if let's say your plan is to have long-term legacy, you can rent it first. And then after that, right now the rental market is still quite warm. After that, you can still potentially increase the value of that property, right? Depending on how you design, depending on how you plan out your overall space in terms of the GFA, which is increasingly popular for, you know, developers to increase a floor area, like the mezzanine floor area and stuff like that, to increase the number of bedrooms, which is also one of the important factors when it comes to the resale market. So if let's say there's a plan, then you can potentially go into this option.
I think there's a second part of the question, right? Is the market quiet for both the renting and the selling?
Right.
So I personally still find that the activity is still very strong, very buoyant. So like if you are already at the market selling or renting, and maybe you're not getting the kind of inquiries that you want, or the traction that you want, right, then maybe you need to explore and look at what's the extensiveness of the marketing of the sale and rental of a property to see whether there are things that, you know, like can be improved to create the results that you are looking out for.
Yeah, it could be a marketing problem or it could be a positioning problem, because real estate is also a form of product and you need to position your product in the market among all the noise. But anyway, let's move to the next question. Thanks for writing in as well. I think this is a question about the type of property that's available in the market. Is there any four beta huge living room, private lift, duplex condo below $3 million right now? Anybody has any, have you seen any suitable properties like this?
I can think of, but not like the full requirement list. I think probably like all this without the private lift, possible. With the private lift, I think very hard. I cannot think of any out of the top of my mind.
This will be like penthouses that are duplex in nature. Below 3 mil, I think OCR region.
Definitely OCR region. They will definitely have big living room.
But dwindling.
Projects, the older projects.
But actually duplex condo, I mean like duplex penthouses are already rare to come by.
No, I just agree lah.
Any listings available?
Oh, you can actually contact George at this number. He will actually consult you on this property purchase.
Anyway, you know, recently you have a case study. Fantastic case study. So we just helped this client sell a $1 million property. Nowadays, it's very, very hard to hear of, right? $1 million property, right?
Okay.
Small property. Purchase $4 million.
Wow, 4x.
You know how we got this deal? It was because the client was pissed off. This client is like one of the top like salesperson in the industry. And salesperson are always very worried about customer service, right? We want to treat people, we also want people to treat us. So when she called the realtor, right? So, oh, you want to buy a letter? How much is your budget? Then the client said, oh, my budget is about $3 million. And then you know what he responded? Oh, $3 million, I think don't waste time. You cannot find anything one. Then don't even want to spend time to meet her or whatever. Then you may find us, love us, and then end up buying something at $4.3+ million. This is a fantastic case study because just by one statement, right? Firstly, you judge the client.
Yeah.
Secondly, you defray your opportunity to serve people. Right? Because I mean, I can just say I got 3+, but actually I can afford up to 5.
Correct.
Right? So people's budget can stretch. Next question. Will the mortgage rates ever drop to 1.15%?
Very good question. Will the mortgage loan rates drop to 1.15% ever? The answer is probably, high chance, yes. When does this kind of situation happen? When there is a global crisis. When was the last time this happened? COVID. When was the time before COVID happens?
Lehman Brothers.
Global financial crisis. So of course, whenever there's a crisis, Fed rate will drop its rate to almost sub-zero, 0%. And so our Singapore mortgage rate will probably hover at less than 1% or at 1%. So that is when that will happen.
Just to give some context, I think the interest rates drop because they want to spur the economy and to encourage borrowing at a cheaper rate. So typically when the economy improves, when the overall GDP increases, that is when they want to increase the interest rates so that you know, to have a very supportive and buoyant economy. So on the flip side is when the economy performs very badly, and when there's a recession, then that is when interest rate will drop to encourage more borrowing. Yeah.
So Summer, I think if you're asking this question, right, but if your intention is that, you know, when the mortgage interest rates drop, whether it's a good time to buy or you're intending to wait for the mortgage rates to drop before you buy to keep the monthly mortgage more manageable, then something to take note of also is that, you know, what we have witnessed previously, let's say even during the COVID pandemic, when the interest rates drop to an all-time low, what happens is that sellers and buyers, they are more motivated to transact in the market. So prices will definitely move upwards. Traditionally, if you were to look at other economies, other countries, when the interest rate rises, prices will drop. And then the inverse is also true. But in Singapore, usually, you know, when the interest rates drop, the prices will increase because of the increased action on the ground. And then sellers are more motivated. Buyers have a higher buying power. And then when the interest rates increase, like what we are seeing now, prices will either hold stagnant or they will even slightly increase because of the selling power of Singaporeans, right? The holding power of Singaporeans, they have no need to sell off when the price is not what they want.
Yeah. Great insight, Grace. So I think if your question, Sin, is that because you want to time the market, then one methodology to note is that a buyer and a seller, they have differing interests and they have differing viewpoints. Because if you are a buyer, you would definitely want to buy a property only when interest rates are very low, because you enter at a rate that you pay very little interest to the bank for your mortgage. But the seller will have a differing interest because you're buying from somebody that owns a property. You're either buying from a developer or you're buying from a seller that owns a property in the resale market. They are going to love it when interest rates are low because they now know all the buyers will want to come in. They have more buying power, and the sellers will definitely raise their prices if they're not urgent to sell, which we have already witnessed many rounds in Singapore. Most people own properties as a form of residence and they are not urgent to sell. We have 90% home ownership rate. So take note of this methodology. We all have differing interests as a seller and as a buyer. Now, second thing is that we have done many episodes before. We are forecasting in next year, and of course, over the span of 24 months moving on, interest rates will start to taper down. Take note, what Yiron mentioned is that in a crisis, rates became low because the Fed in US, they are printing money. So there's quantitative easing. When rates are high, it's because they want to fight inflation. So they will go for quantitative tightening, which is what has happened now. But rates have already went up for 9 rounds. Now we are waiting for the pivot. And last thing to note is that Singapore is also very smart. We are pivoting to SORA rates, right? So SORA rates in terms of fixed rates, they are now at about 3.2, 3.5%. They are more affordable than the past. Mm. Yeah, so this is basically some of the things that are going on. But end of the day, do not time the market. That would be the end day advice. Now let's have a look at this question.
Yeah, I have 2 more points to add over here. Sure. Right? So I think... very, very quickly is that about timing the market is because actually the overall holding power of the property market is the strongest that I've ever seen based on research perspective. So there are 2 things. Number one, right now, as all these bank collapses globally, interest rate going up, recession concerns, actually, if we track property guru supply index, right, the number of listings is actually dropping dramatically. So when that happens, when the market is considered sort of like not a good market and you see supply reducing, what I mean is that because the holding power is strong, people don't have to sell to liquidate. If you see that the market news is not so good and supply net is increasing, that signals a market that is weak. Point 2 is if we look at the household net worth of Singaporeans compared to the mortgage loan ratio, in 2000, about 17% is the overall mortgage loan versus household net worth. But in 2023, quarter one, right, we are actually at 9.9%. So that also is another statistic to look at in terms of the overall household debt ratio is decreasing. So that, of course, signifies the holding power as well.
I like it when you say the word dramatically. Can you say it again?
Dramatically.
No, you didn't say it this way. Yeah. Say it again.
Dramatically?
I like it when you say
percent.
No, I like it when you always start off with generally 2 things.
Percent.
Number 1. Number 2. I know all your kodo chan.
Great. Awesome. next question.
Let's have a look at the next dramatic question. Okay. Resale condo or cluster landed with budget of $3 million. Which one will you buy? Come. Resale condo or cluster landed? I think we just did this webinar. Anybody want to answer it?
Generally. Number one. Okay. Okay, looking at the question, there's two parts. First is condo versus cluster landed. The second is your budget of $3 million. So if we were to compare resale condo versus your cluster landed, I think, okay, so looking at the transactions in the past, we talk a lot about the, what is that thing called?
Disparity?
No. The chasm gap, yeah. So looking at the chasm gap, we can see that, you know, because of actually, if we were to trace a little bit back into history, we'll know that there was one period that condominiums had a very good appreciation prices, and the gap between condos and landed were quite close. Because at that time, condominiums, I think they also signified a kind of lifestyle. You have your amenities and all that, which landed doesn't have.
The right? 5 C's.
Yes, the 5 C's, your credit card, your car, your condos and all that. But looking at, you know, especially after the pandemic, when space is definitely something that people are looking at, landed homes have become more and more attractive in the market. Number one is because of inelasticity of the supply. Right, because landed homes are hovering at about 4%, 73,000 in the market, compared to condominiums, which are about 21%. If you were to compare the two, you will know that, you know, landed homes are a lot more exclusive. They are only Singaporeans can purchase landed homes, and the government is no longer selling this kind of freehold land in the GLS, right? So if we are talking about inelasticity of supply and pricing, we know that, okay, hovering at 4%, there is not going to be an increase in supply already. The only way is possibly redevelopment. So probably owners doing ANA, tear down, or en bloc of existing freehold land. Yeah. And this will lead to an increasing price disparity, where land homes continue to hold their price or increase. I think personally, I will go for the strata. The cluster landed. Yeah, because I think that is still a market segment where we'll really hold its pricing compared to others. But you will have to study the specific project as well. Mm. Yeah, because cluster landeds, they're not full landed properties. Yeah, so you will have to study the specific project. Resale condos, if you actually look, I think resale condos, you know, at with a budget of $3 million, can get you something, let's say in OCR, something very substantial size, right? So possibly if you are looking to buy into it and your horizon is in 5 years, it is still worthy to look at. And then after 5 years, you can possibly get quite a fair bit of appreciation from it.
I think if you can find a freehold $3 million cluster landed, you just go for it. Yes. Right. So the because anyway, $3 million for freehold cluster landed, right, it's almost you cannot find already.
It's gonna
very,
be gone.
Very, very limited stock. But if let's say you are talking about 99 years cluster, at about a $3 million range versus resale condo at $3 million range, then I think it is quite a I would say there is probably in terms of resale condo, it will be easier to predict in terms of price growth. But I wouldn't need to spend the full $3 million to get into like a resale condo, right? So maybe I could limit it to like $2 to $2.5 million. Let's say for like, you know, like at least a 3-bedder and I'm okay with OCR region. But if it's a freehold, then just go for it.
Yiro, why won't you spend the entire $3 million on a condominium?
This is my own like my personal benchmarking system. So in every asset class, across location, across bedroom types, right, there is always a range, right? A starting price range to the highest price range.
Right.
So personally, I feel more comfortable buying at the medium price range or lower for that specific property type that I'm going into. Rationale is because if let's say, for example, I purchase at the 90th percentile in terms of pricing for that product category, right?
Yeah.
There is a lot of confusion for my next buyer that I want to exit to, because they can probably choose the next category. Maybe it is better in terms of tenure, maybe it's better in terms of location, maybe it's better in terms of size, or maybe it's better in terms of the asset class.
Right.
And hence, it will make my exit time longer because I need to find a very specific buyer to exit to. So that's the rationale.
Okay. But what if you only have one bullet?
If I only have one bullet.
And one name.
If I only have one name. So the balance funds, I could, you know, like repopulate into, let's say, you know, like non-residential property investments. Mm. I could put it into a Singapore savings bond,
right,
which is at 3% auto-renew every 1 year, highly liquid. I mean, there are many options, but I can put it in an S&P 500 index and I just have a holding period of 10 years. Yeah.
Okay.
But of course, I think like all this, it depends on like your own understanding of the different asset classes, because when the asset that you pour your money into is too liquid, right? Sometimes liquidity means that, you know, it's easier to draw out money. It also means that it's easier to end up with bad decisions, rotate this money out into bad investments, and eventually lose out money. Like. So that's the whole psychological process.
Mm. Great. Sorry, George, you're talking about the inventory level of strata housing.
Yeah. So at this current status, freehold, 999 years, you only have, I think, 3 or 4 options. And so I think when we talk about strata lender, right, there's also a few different categories that we want to look at also. Some are occupying a very small footprint, although the overall built up is very good. It can be 2,000 plus, 3,000, but take note of any other floor areas such as the void space or the roof terrace space or even the car park spaces. So this might be some of the consideration if you know you're having this budget of 3 million, you want to go for something that is freehold or 999 years. Location-wise, it might not be in an area that is very well connected in order to get this price point. So yeah, that's kind of on the inventory level.
Okay.
Something also about strata landed is that some of them is open to foreigners and some are not, right? So it depends on the project that is in. Some are approved, some are not. So that's also something to consider in terms of your exit audience.
Yeah. So we can look at this table here. So strata landed, there's approximately about 5,000 plus of them. We don't have the actual figures, but this is a rough gauge based on transactions that has been lodged for the past, I think, 20 years. The point that Grace has pointed out is that for a strata landed to qualify purchased by a foreigner, it means that if you were to own this kind of strata, you have an international audience that is allowed to buy over your strata next time. However, this kind of strata only belongs to strata existing in condominium status projects, and there are not a lot of them. We have an article on propertyinbrothers.com, our insights article. You can have a look at that. I think Sebastian wrote 2 articles on that. We list down all the condos with strata landed that foreigners can buy. So these are some things that you can look at. Second thing is that I think the key fundamental question came because maybe you could be struggling in the sense that lender has moved up so much. Like lender now is about $4 million over entry for freehold, 999 years. Then you might be thinking of alternatives and you want space. So I presume your question came because you want at least 4 or 5 bedrooms. So you are maybe in a dilemma. Should I go for 4 or 5 beta 99 years condo with facilities? Or I have always aspired to live in a landed. Why don't I consider this hybrid option of strata? One thing to take note is also maintenance fee sometimes can go up quite to a substantial extent if it's a boutique development of strata homes with maybe 8 to 20 units. Sometimes it escalates after many years because you need to build sinking fund to repair and stuff like that. This is one more thing. Last thing to note is that I think this could be the last train before freehold strata will start to move closer to $4 million range. So if you can still find in the year 2023 freehold or 999 strata landed, there is around 3 million, then I think you should immediately go for it. It's a clear winner compared to a 99's condo. So that's my conclusion. And let's move to the next question. Thanks everyone for chipping in on this. Ben, based on your questions, I think you could be in a very strange life stage. Why do you ask all these questions? Yeah. Singaporean married a PR, what to look out for? This is not a dating agency, man, bro.
Yeah. What pass is the person holding?
In terms of buying a property, what do I need to? What are the limitations?
Singapore and PR, you can buy brand new EC, you can buy BTO, you can buy a HDB resale,
most
you can buy a condo.
Make sure the foundation of the relationship
like,
is strong.
Why are you even getting married? Is it for property or is it because of true love? You need to be very clear then.
True love is the first first
factor. No, because he truly fell in love with the PR, so now he needs to know what to look out for.
Mm.
Yes.
What a play of words.
Who?
Hey, show the Instagram here.
Maybe not even PR yet. Is it one of our Malaysian teammates?
So I have a friend. Yep. So he married a Malaysian. So she's in the process of getting her PR status. But also at the same time, in terms of the job situation also, they realize even to get a HDB loan, you need to be working for at least a year in order to even get the HDB loan. So they are kind of struggling with that, in a sense that I think there isn't a lot of information about what they should do. If, like, let's say your partner is a PR, or your partner is a foreigner that's becoming a Singaporean, like, what are the different processes they should take note of, or, like, should they even, like, because they're considering just a HDB only.
Oh,
this is your best source of information.
Actually, 3 months. Actually, if you have 3 months payslip, you can try already HDB loan, because they will look into the case to give you the HR and stuff like that. You can always try. One more thing about Singapore Married PR is that I think it's the best combination. Of course, Daniel, if it's true love, the PR should not give up your citizenship in your home country, because it is actually one of the best combination here. You can counter invest back in the home country as well for real estate. Let's say you are a Malaysian citizen, you got a PR here, but your spouse is Singaporean. I think that's good enough, right? You can still own properties in Malaysia. But if you want to buy HDB here, then take note there's a policy that you have to sell off all international residential property before you're allowed to buy a BTO HDB or resale HDB. So you have to sell everything. And you have to wait 15 months now. So this is also something to think about. But once you have... But why are you so shocked?
But once you
start clean first, you own the HDB first, clear your 5S MOP. After that, you want to own whatever international property is up to you. So I think this is one of the best combination. Mm. Yeah.
I think the other thing is actually Singapore is very pro-family. What? You know that
I'm trying to do the
没有，我要吃薯条了. That's, you know, Singapore. Then after that, she's like,
wait, so is it better if the spouse were to just keep a PR status,
yes,
or the person should get a dual citizenship?
No.
Apologies. You know, I eat the most, right, in NOTG, right? So, you know, I need to like swallow the stuff. And when don't I'm worry. Swallowing,
Singapore,
course,
come
you know,
out.
Okay. Singapore.
Okay,
come
let's
out.
Answer Seth's question.
Right. Of course.
No, I feel that this combination is actually just right already. But of course, if there are other motivations to have dual Singaporeans, then I think it's okay. But in my sense is that there's not too much jump of a benefit. Yeah. To if one is a real Singaporean, one is a PR, I think it's a very nice company. There's not too much benefit if this also upgrades to Singaporean. Yeah.
Unless you want to maximize the landed property purchase.
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes.
That's the probably the only
thing. But I think their questions are mostly looking at first-time home buyers, like very, you know, at a very beginning life stage. So there is that disparity in terms of grant also. So
$10,000.
But it could be quite significant for a first time home buyer. So that could be something that they're thinking about.
But you can retire
a very, very good point in terms of maybe like it's like a 10K difference in terms of grant. But if you produce a baby, Singaporean, within 6 months, you can always apply for a top up grant. That
your pronunciation is a bit odd today.
Really?
Like you produce a baby.
Percent?
Dramatic. There's like a curve.
Singapore.
Yeah. Like a coast if you produce, as in like the saliva.
Produce okay, a baby.
The point I wanted to mention is because we are quite pro-family, so what happens is Singaporean buying your first property, 0% additional buyer stamp duty. PR buying your first property, 5% additional buyer stamp duty. But because if you are married, buying your first property, matrimonial home together, you don't need to pay any 5% additional buyer stamp, even you're a Singaporean or PR when you are trying to go for a private property as well. I think the 1 year payslip is important only if you are in the income bracket where you need to go for enhanced housing grant if you're looking for HDB. If you are just purely looking for a HDB loan, like what Melvin mentioned, probably as little as 3 months might be possible already.
Mm. Okay, so let's have a look at the next question. Hi, I'm currently earning $3,000. My partner is earning $3,008. Probably age both 26, I presume, based on the way that you have written. Let's just assume both of you are 26 years old. Your question is, how should I go about buying, whether it should be a resale HDB or a BTO HDB? So that means combined income $6,008. They're young, 26 years old. Which one should they choose? HDB, resale, or BTO?
Need to do some calculations, but I think the first question to confirm is, if you want to explore like a resale property, right, is the stability of the relationship. So like, why everybody look at me suddenly like, okay, the stability of relationship. So of course, if you find that like this is the right partner, then we talk about the property planning, because we always don't want the property decision, right, to be sort of like the reason why we want to get married. So I think that is important. So assuming that it is correct, then of course I think both options are applicable. I think BTO definitely, you guys are still young. BTO definitely can give you more options in terms of the price, in the same price point, you can buy something that is larger. So I'm trying to do some calculation.
So while Yurong is calculating, right, maybe I just weigh in on my thoughts. If let's say you feel that you have the time to wait, BTO, just take note, 4 plus 5 years. That is if you can get a queue number. Past experiences is that naturally, I think a lot of people will just go for those BTO classes that are quite highly in demand. So if let's say, you know, you're going for a BTO project that is not by, you know, the location, you just want to go for something of the lowest quantum, you have the time to wait, by all means, I think that will be a very comfortable stepping stone. If let's say you are going for some areas that are highly contested, then you have to be prepared that you might not get a good queue number, and then there will be a lot of time wastage over there. It might be 1 year in. So your overall time horizon can be maybe even 9 years or so, including the waiting time. So I think that will be the consideration. If let's say, you know, you just want to quickly settle down, relationship like what Yurong mentioned is very stable, you just want to quickly settle down, leverage on the grants, buy into something that is within your affordability, which Yurong is punching a number now, then I think that can be one of the options.
In short, if you take a HDB loan, based on your income, you can actually loan up to about $430,000, which easily can help you purchase...
Can purchase something as
$537,000. I think the options are quite okay. Can be a 4-room flat, but of course it will be slightly older. And if you get a 4-room flat, you can get 80,000 first timer grant. Depending on whether you are going to be within 4 kilometers of your family. If that is so, you have an additional 20,000 grant, and combined income, you get a little bit of enhanced housing grant as well. So I think, if you want to maximize your property journey route, I think, and of course, you know, like the relationship, you're stable already, I think you can go with resale as a primary option. Think of it as we want to exit out the MOP as soon as possible. And in short, because if you can maximize your grant that you'll get, your grants are actually your appreciation. So because the grant is actually your money.
Which is about 100,000 already.
Awesome. It seems to me that there's quite a fair bit of... questions on cluster
ROI,
housing.
ROI, right?
Yeah. So there's this question from Fiza, which has higher ROI freehold cluster house in the condo development at D14. So cluster house in D14 freehold versus freehold pure landed in D20, which has a better ROI. There's also one question here on cluster housing as well by Chiu Hui. Which district do you think has the highest potential ROI looking at cluster house? So actually, I think this year there's a lot of people asking about cluster houses. I think it's really the disparity effect forming. Pure Land is out of reach.
Correct.
This is the next best class for $3 million range already. So why don't we just complete these two questions, right? So D14 cluster house versus Pure Land in D20. I think naturally
D20,
right? Because D20, I mean, if we just look at products, just by the fact that it's a Pure Land is already on a higher tier of appreciation potential, because of the very fact that in the past and even until today or in future as well, cluster houses, they are still a hybrid class. Majority of cluster houses, 90% of cluster houses in Singapore, only Singaporeans can buy. So because of that fact, you are contesting with pure landed. And Singaporeans, naturally, they always have this dilemma. Hey, should I go for pure landed or should I go for a cluster house? Because based on performance history, pure landed has always performed and outperformed cluster house in terms of appreciation. Cluster houses, they usually appreciate in today's situation. And you might have to wait for this situation in 2023. I don't know, maybe 10 years down the road. Then it will happen again. Mm. What is this situation? The situation is that the price of landed just escalated upwards. That formed a gap in between for cluster house to move up a bit to fill it. But once it has started to move up to maybe, I don't know, in the year 2024, it starts to move up to about $4 million. It's a bit too close to pure landed. Pure landed is going to start to move again, right? So, and pure landed usually move faster than cluster houses. And most of the time, a lot of cluster houses, they do not have facilities for children. They have higher maintenance fee. So sometimes people also will come to another dilemma, which is, should I just get a condominium, right? Mm-hmm. At maybe $2 million. I get a 4 or 5 bedder in the 99 project. So the dilemma is usually what causes the slower appreciation and usually takes place, I don't know, once every 10 or 15 years. Yeah. So how about the rest? Any thoughts about these two questions?
I think District 20 is also a very healthy landed area because we also look at, in terms of appreciation, we want to look at which district has one of the highest transaction volume regarding to landed. So District 20 is, I think, one of the top three zonings that have the most activity. So when there is activity, it's easier for you to get, you know, like pricing increase because banks as well as buyers, it's easier to benchmark with regards to like, you know, like pricing trends. Mm. And of course, so I would probably go for the D20 freehold landed.
Right.
If it's for D14, I think D14, it is a very good overall undervalued district from a non-landed perspective. Partially because there's also more transformation factors to come in D14. There are also other factors that causes like D14 to be probably the most undervalued in terms of city fringe location. So if I'm investing in a condo, definitely this is one of the districts that I'll explore. But of course, project selection, unit selection is more important than the district selection.
Which project do you like in D14?
Do I need to say it?
No.
Super. Oh, okay. So D14, I love Sims Urban Oasis. You know, I also like Park Astar. You know, this year transacted quite a number of Park Astar units as well. And then Penrose is coming up, which is going to be probably like, you know, a very attractive option in end of this year, next year, when it's going to nearing its TOP. Even D14, like for those pure really investors, you're not buying for own stay one, you might even find places like Sunny Spring interesting.
That's a very interesting project.
Yeah. Mm. Sunny Spring has quite a good appreciation over the last 1 year as well.
Okay, how about this question? Anybody want to answer? Take it up. Which district has the highest potential ROI?
Chihui,
why don't we suggest that you can drop us an email at insights@prb.sg, or you can just reply here, tag us with your email address privately, DM us, and then we will send you the private link of webinar number 7, Cluster House, because in that webinar, we talk about which district has some of the very good performing ROI for cluster houses. Shall we do that?
Sure.
All right. And of course, you can also sign up for a consult session with us. Free. You get to meet Yurong.
Give you a perspective.
Perspective.
Yeah, Yurong will be happy to meet you to chat more. Okay, great. So why don't we have a final and last question? And Grace.
Any private property?
Budget obviously. 1.3 million. Any private property in the northeast area to consider? I think I assume you're looking at 3 bidder. Yeah, at this quantum. Northeast area is one of the remaining few that it will still have very good properties at 1.3. Think River. What's that one?
Regentville.
Regentville. They still have 3 bidders, I think, for 1.2 plus.
1.3 plus, yeah.
Yeah, 1.3 plus, yeah.
As in like, okay, in terms of options wise,
I think 1.3, right, what they can get, northeast, if let's say we zoom into the area, like for example, Punggol area, you can probably still find something that is compact in nature. 1.3 million, very, very compact. So the third bedroom, of course, will be smaller, or you don't have utility room, but you still get a 3 bedder. Unless you're saying that you go for the older projects, older projects, you might want to bump up a little bit, or, you know, like the older project that is right beside, the Buangkok MRT station, like Park Green, you know, all those
projects. Oxville residences.
Yeah. So those would then be slightly, away from the MRT station, but pure 3-bedroom, you can still find something that is big, something that is decent. You can see this as, you know, one of the lowest quantum for 3-bedder towards the northeast area, buy for own stay. That I believe if you go for the right size, the facing and all that stuff, you should still be able to exit purely because the rest of the other prices have moved beyond this 1.3 range.
Mm.
But I think like usually when clients ask, you know, like about the what question, I'm always very cautious to, you know, like just name the project, right? Because rationale is, in terms of a good portfolio planning standpoint, what is important foundationally is to understand what is your goals, what is your risk appetite, what are you trying to do, as well as your financials. Then you develop a strategy to decide what quantum, what region, what property type, when should you exit. And then from there, when you have all these fundamental boundaries decided already, and then the right property deal will actually surface easily, right? So we try not to do the reverse, which is answering the what. So it's answer why, and then the how first before I answer the what.
Awesome. Great. So we've come to the end of today's AMA episode. And I'm always welcome you to send us any further questions that you might have just in the comment section. You can also drop your questions if it's a long scenario questions to insights@prb.sg. Okay, so any final thoughts from anybody? If not, we shall end the episode.
I think there's a lot of questions about like what, like comparison questions.
Right.
And then, yeah. So one key, I think, guiding principle would just be to spot disparities in the market. And then when you are buying something that is on the upper limit of the asset class that you're in, also it could be like two bidders versus three bidders. You know, if in that project, two bidders are already hitting a price that you can, you know, just bump up a little bit more to buy a three bidder, for example, then perhaps there's something you need to be careful about. So the same principle applies across asset classes, across unit types as well, and project types also.
All right, Yuong.
Buy diligently.
George, what advice for all this?
I think do the homework. Do not rush into it and make a better informed decision. Do not buy hastily.
Okay. All right, awesome. We'll see you on the next episode. Take care.